is the Fruit of Beans, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with regenerative radio waves. This warms your yak to a seared and seasoned, tasty and toasty 145 medium rare degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head and to keep the little punk juvenile delinquent in line. Can you feel it? Is it working, Lisa? Can you feel it?
I can feel it. It's working. You had to throw the little yak comment in there, huh?
Yeah, he's getting a little bit too big for his britches, so. But yeah. When we auction him off at Pork Fest, everything will be fine.
And the Fruit of Beans. I wonder how he feels about that.
I'm sure we'll find out as he's crying. But anyway, The Fruit of Beans is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So, what's new and exciting, Lisa? What's going on in your world?
Hey, my website has the BIPCOT no government license now.
Really?
That's exciting. Yeah.
And what is your website? Where can they find you?
Oh, nutritionalanarchy.
Okay. and how long have you been covered by BIPCOT?
Oh, like 2 days. Yeah.
Has the amount of traffic increased since adding BIPCOT?
I have not checked yet. I'll have to check tomorrow.
Or has it decreased a little bit because government agents are no longer going to your website and looking at it?
I wonder. I'll have to look. I'll have to look at the data and see, you know, who's coming to the site and or who was before and who's not now. It'd be interesting to see if there's a difference.
Yeah, because I'm sure like the FDA, USDA, and the rest of them, you know, they've stopped going there because, you know, you said, hey, you're not allowed to, government. Get out of here.
Yeah, they're not allowed to. They're so banned.
Well, it's probably a good thing to do. Anyway, what sort of articles are people going to find on there? Have you done anything recently on that website?
It's just me doing my usual bashing of sugar and you know, the government's nutrition guidelines that are upside down, you know, completely backwards. The usual, nothing unusual for me.
Okay. You've been particularly busy with another website recently. Tell us a little bit about that. You've had a couple articles that have really exploded.
Right. I work for a company that owns a site called Jake's Health Solutions. And a lot of what we talk about there is mental health and psychology. And lately, I've been really interested in cognitive dissonance. In particular, how it relates.
Tonight.
Sure. Yeah. In particular, how it relates to political beliefs and why people cling to certain candidates, no matter what, you know, evidence shows that that person might be the worst person for the job. And then also why people do bad things, you know, why they're so easily coaxed into doing bad things. So, been kind of my thing lately.
Okay. And you've also just done part one of a stop smoking project.
I actually did two parts so far. So the first section is about, again, cognitive dissonance and why the excuses and reasons and rationalizations that smokers use to keep up the habit, you know, even though they know it's bad for them, because it's not like anyone thinks smoking is good for them. And then part two is about the tobacco industry and the things that they've known for years, decades actually, about how addictive nicotine and some other components in tobacco are, and they hid that information from the public, of course.
Okay, so that's your part one there, correct? Or,
well, part one was just about the lies people tell themselves.
Okay.
You know,
okay,
in order to keep smoking. Yeah.
Okay. As somebody who smoked for like 30 years, I could tell you that I was very participatory in the lies and rationales and or rationalization and just coming up with reasons to keep smoking.
Right.
And finally, and by the way, I'll hit 12 weeks this Friday, and I haven't talked about much because I didn't want to be the reformed smoker that won't shut the hell up about his not smoking anymore.
No, that's excellent.
And I've been off the patch for, oh gosh, probably a week right about now. my thing about the patch is I didn't take it every, or I didn't use it every day. I would forget to put it on, like when I got up in the morning, and then I'd throw one in my coat pocket and say, well, when I get to work, I'll put it on. And next thing I know, it's like noon, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's like, well, okay, well, I guess I should put my patch on so I don't like crave before I leave and go home in a couple hours.
Right. So,
but yeah, so I've been a little bit over a week there, and I was actually worried about going without the patch because that's kind of been my little safety net. But once again, I wasn't using it daily as prescribed, like you're supposed to. Mm-hmm. So the whole weaning process was starting a little bit early for me, even though it wasn't intentional.
That's good, because I've been wondering that about the patch, you know, if it kind of keeps people, you know, in the habit longer than they would be if they just went completely cold turkey. But I say whatever works for you is what you should do.
Yeah. Well, I think the reason that the patch worked for me this time, and it was my first time using the patch, but I tried like the nicotine gum in the past, and it did absolutely nothing for me. Absolutely doodly squat. But I noticed that when I first started using the patch, I'd been using it for like a week or so, and I said, this thing's just a placebo. It's not doing anything for me. You know, this is just scotch tape with Nicoderm written on it. Well, I didn't wear my patch on, and this is like after a week. I didn't wear my patch on Friday and Saturday, and come Saturday night, I was fiending hard. And if there was a day that I was going to break, if there was a day that I was going to have my moment of weakness and relapse back into tobacco use, that night was the night. I was just, ugh. So I wound up putting my patch back on that night before I went to bed, and I was kind of worried about putting it on at night because I'd heard that you could have funny dreams from it. That never, but anyway, so I gave that a shot and stuck with it, and that's when I realized that it was actually having an impact. Now, what I think, and I have no scientific basis to back this up, but what I think happened that the patch enabled me to quit was I was getting the delivery of nicotine because I am a nicotine addict, and I was able to focus on battling the oral fixation of smoking, the inhalation, the putting the cigarette in your mouth, the hand gestures. There's only been maybe two, possibly three times at the most where I've actually reached for my pack and grabbed it, or to grab it, and it wasn't there. And there's only been a couple of times where I says to myself, okay, it's 10 a.m., time to go grab my morning cigarette. So I think what that did, I think what the patch did was it ran interference for the nicotine addiction while working on the habit portion of it. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense, yeah, because you do have the two components, you know, of the habit. One would be the physical, which the patch would help with, and the other is the psychological, which is the actual motion and the habit pair. You know, if you're used to having a cigarette at a certain time of day or while you're doing certain things, that can be kind of hard to break up. I used to kind of joke with clients when I help people quit for a living and tell them to take up knitting or find something else to do with their hands, you know, at the times where they were having the biggest struggles with the actual, you know, wanting to hold a cigarette.
Yeah.
Anything that, to distract you.
That habit pair that you're talking about, one of the things that I did before I started my quitting process, or as I was getting ready to quit, probably a week or two before, I started changing things around. I changed my schedule of when I smoked. I changed places of where I would smoke. So, and it used to be that I would get up in the morning, go outside, sit on the front porch in the little chair, you know, little camping chair, and smoke a cigarette out there. Well, anyway, I quit doing that. I would go smoke out on the front or on the back steps or something like that. I would smoke in different places, and I would do it at a different time.
Yeah.
So, about the only habit pair that I did not change was the smoking while I drive.
Oh. Yeah, that's a big one for people, too. I used to tell people to really clean their car out, make it smell nice, you know, get rid of any signs of any cigarettes in the car, you know, get rid of the ashtray or anything that could be used as one, make it really difficult for you to be able to smoke in there.
Yep. The weekend that I quit, I wound up going and shooting the truck with Febreze.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So I got rid of the smell. But yep. Something that's interesting, I've noticed this for a couple weeks now, I can smell smokers. Like if I get in the elevator at work or if I'm talking to somebody, I can smell that they're a smoker now. Where before I couldn't do that unless it was somebody who just was like a super duper chain smoker.
Right, because your sense of taste and smell will be enhanced after you quit.
Well, yeah, a little bit. And plus, my sense of taste and smell was pretty darn good before, but now... Mm-hmm. I think it's, particularly the smell, is really escalated quite a bit.
Is that a good thing?
Maybe. I don't really like smelling the smokers, and I definitely don't want an enhanced sense of taste because, as you know, I could probably drop a couple of inches off the waistline. Well, I'm kind of proud because I've only put on maybe 7 pounds since I stopped smoking.
Yeah, that is good. Some people really, really go. I've seen people have serious weight gain. And that's when I helped people quit for a living, one of the goals was to make that not happen, you know, to not replace one habit with another, because there is the oral fixation aspect to it. So if you're not smoking, you may want to put something else in your mouth, candy or whatever it may be, French fries. I don't know.
I have gone through my fair share and probably a couple other people's fair shares of lemon drops.
I mean, it's not such a bad choice. Could be worse.
I was going through like eight or ten of them each day.
Yeah, well, they're small.
Well, yeah, but it's got the sugar coating on it. So what would happen is I would scratch the roof of my mouth and my gums from the sugar that was on there.
Oh. But
more Freedom Fiends coming up after this trip to the market. Freedom Fiends, we won't scratch your gums.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
This is Lou, and I'm joined by Lisa, and
hello.
We're going to be talking about a bunch of thought process stuff tonight, and which one do you want to go into first? Did you want to talk about the article on cognitive dissonance, particularly when it comes to candidates and everything else?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, go ahead and get us started with this. What is cognitive dissonance?
Well, that is when a person, I'll make it simple. Cognitions are thoughts or beliefs that you have about something. Dissonance is when those things aren't in harmony. So cognitive dissonance is when a person has stress or discomfort when they're holding two contradictory beliefs or ideas about something. So to tie in with the smoking that we were talking about, somebody who smokes might, you know, they know smoking is bad for them and that they should quit. But they keep doing it anyway, so they're experiencing some cognitive dissonance there. It's like, oh, I know this is really bad for me, but I want to keep doing it. And so one of the things they do is start lying to themselves. They start rationalizing it. You know, it's really not that bad for you. You know, I'm going to die of something anyway. They kind of resort to mental gymnastics you know, to keep, you know, kind of rationalize the behavior. That was okay for me to do this. You know, it's not that big of a deal, even when they know it is.
Okay. But the big thing about cognitive dissonance is the rationalization, the bullshumering themselves to keep the illusion going.
Right. And people will discard or avoid hearing any information that, you know, kind of isn't consistent with their current beliefs.
Okay. And talk a little bit about the discomfort that somebody might feel when they're faced with this conflicting information.
Yeah, sure. So the psychologist who started really examining this phenomenon, something that he noticed was he was studying cults, and he noticed that there was this one particular cult back in the 50s who believed that they were getting messages from a fictitious planet called Clarion. And they were told, supposedly by these aliens, that the world was going to end in this big cataclysmic flood. And so this was supposed to happen on December 21st, 1954. So all the cult members sold all of their belongings. They prepared for this because they were convinced they were going to be saved because they actually believed what these aliens were saying. So this psychologist, Leon Festinger, heard about this cult. He read about them, and he's like, you know what? I want to infiltrate this group, pretend to be one of them, and, you know, see what their thought process is. And I want to, in particular, see how they handle it when the end of the world actually doesn't come. You know, do they rationalize it? Do they accept it? You know, do they admit that they were wrong and move on? So what happened was, of course, the day of the apocalypse came and nothing happened. And he observed the group, and what they did was, at first they were in denial, you know, oh, we must have been mistaken, you know, maybe we had the wrong date, the aliens maybe changed their mind, you know, something happened. They were trying to rationalize it rather than admitting that, you know what, this might have been a crazy idea to begin with. This probably wasn't ever going to happen. This is a hoax. They didn't want to admit that. So what they did was, a couple hours in, you know, after they realized this, the aliens weren't coming to save them, is they said, oh, you know what, we got another message from them, and God decided to save the earth, and the flood isn't going to come after all. So that led him to explore this a bit more. And what happens usually is people will just disregard. Logic goes completely out the window. It's a completely emotional process.
It's really interesting.
Yeah,
Could you imagine that you belong to some cult and you're like, okay, the world's going to end. You know, we did our mathematics and it's going to end on this date. And then that day comes around and everything's still there. You know, kind of like the 2012 doomsday prophecy. And the best they can come up with is, oh man, we got the wrong date. We're figuring it out. And we forgot to carry the two. So it's going to happen some other time. It's going to be at least a good couple of months before we can figure this out, and by that time everybody will forget about our silliness. It's really amazing how people will hold on to such a stupid notion, such a stupid belief, idea, whatever you want to call it, and defend it like it's their mother. I mean, it's like the state. You could wind up talking about how roads were privately built for the most part before government got involved, before they took it over, and they've done well and cheap, and people will respond with, but what about the roads? So anyway,
yeah, they
more
do
on the, more on this when we come back.
Okay.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Hey, do you play play like air guitar when that music starts. I really like that one. This is the Freedom Fiends. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Lisa, and we are talking about cognitive dissonance and how people react to information that goes against their widely held belief systems. And when you see somebody's face turning red and the veins start pounding, it looks like their head's going to explode. That might be cognitive dissonance.
It just might be. And something that's very interesting about it is that the more proof that someone gets that a belief is false, you know, or is based on totally flawed logic, a lot of times they become even more steadfast in that belief. So with the cult that we were talking about earlier, those people, instead of just being quiet about it and kind of just, you know, trying to hide from society and hang their heads in shame, decided that, you know what, hey, we need to recruit more people because this is going to happen eventually. You know, at some point, God is going to get really mad at us, and he's going to say he's had enough and flood the earth, and these aliens are going to save us. So they went out. Previously, they had kind of shunned publicity. But after the apocalypse failed to happen, they went out and looked for more support, and they wanted more members, and they went on this big campaign to spread the message as far as they could. And researchers say that's because, you know, the more people that you can persuade that a system works and is correct, then clearly it's more correct. You know, there's strength in numbers.
Okay, so, well, the belief is that there's actually accuracy in numbers.
Right.
Also. Mm-hmm. So rather than licking their wounds, they said, hey, if we just apocalypse harder, it's going to happen.
Right.
Yeah, we just have to prepare harder. We just have to make God madder so that he'll destroy. And we just have to, like, phone home harder so that E.T. will come rescue us. Is that basically what's happening?
Yes. Yeah, that's okay.
One of the things I'm curious about, because you had mentioned that they sold all their belongings and they started preparing for the apocalypse. I'm wondering what happened to their money, because usually with a lot of these cults, the members will wind up selling all their stuff and giving it to whoever's in charge or whatever, and then, like, they disappear. So,
yeah, that's a good question. The lady who started this cult, the person who supposedly was the one that was getting the messages by automatic writing from these aliens, she, last I read, is still alive and lives in another country now, and now she's some kind of, like, shaman or healer. So I don't know if she took their money or if they just got rid of their belongings because, you know, they didn't want to have anything physical that they'd have to worry about when the aliens came. I don't know. That's a good question, though.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, do you know which country she's living in? You said that she's, like, working as a shaman, so she hasn't left the entertainment industry behind?
Right. You know, I'm curious. I'm going to have to, I'll look it up and find out. I don't remember where she is.
All right,
Dorothy Martin is her name.
Okay, that is your homework assignment.
Okay.
So, now, there was another example in the article, and it was the opening statement, and it showed part of the rationalization thought process. It was the story of the fox trying to get the grapes.
Yes.
And as I recall it, the fox was trying to jump up and grab grapes off of the grapevine, but he just couldn't reach them, and no matter how harder he jumped or how higher he jumped, he still kept falling short of the grapevine, so he wasn't able to get the grapes. So rather than saying, well, you know what, I just can't get the grapes, or rather than, well, the foxes don't have opposable thumbs, so he can't go grab a ladder and set that up.
Right.
But rather than saying, you know what, I just can't reach it, in the story he says, well, those grapes were probably bad anyway. They were probably rotten.
Yes.
And rather than admitting that he could not get the grapes, he turned them into something undesirable so that he would not feel the loss of not being able to get those grapes.
Correct.
So a lot of times when people say, well, I didn't want that anyway, they did. It's just that's their way of justifying and rationalizing so they don't have to admit failure or defeat or something like that.
Yeah, it sure is. They want something, they can't have it, and they say, "Ah, you know what? I didn't like it anyway. I didn't really want it." It's another way people rationalize things.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about how this impacts people with their great man worship, with their politicians. And I don't think that there's any politician whose supporters are above it. And I know that when I was still doing the Ron Paul thing, that if somebody whipped out an objection to Ron Paul, and I, there were legitimate objections, but if they whipped out a objection to Ron Paul, I was like, oh, no, no, that's not true, and I would have my cognitive dissonance. And I mean, it's really amazing, because like with Trump, you can play a recording of something that he said, and I find the YouTube video, and it shows it's him, it's his voice, it's everything, and you can tell it's not fake. And you can show that to a Trump supporter, and they're like, he didn't say that. Well, that's not what he meant. I mean, they will just literally break their mental necks to defend him.
Yeah, they do. They'll do anything to justify it. They'll say that it's the media that's after him. They'll say it was taken out of context. They'll do anything to justify it. It's like he can do no wrong. I mean, he could barbecue babies on the White House lawn, and people would find a reason that it's okay. It's fine that he did that. I'm convinced he and Hillary Clinton both could get away with anything.
Well, Trump did say that he could shoot somebody in the face, it wouldn't affect his poll numbers.
Right. And people are saying, well, I like him because he's honest, and he tells it like it is. Well,
do I need to go back into that article that I read last, what was it, Sunday night with you and James?
Right.
You want some straight talk? We got some straight talk for you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so. I see it all the time. I had somebody get really, really mad at me the other day, and he ended up blocking me on Facebook because I posted something about Trump that was fact. It wasn't even one of my usual, you know, memes making fun of Trump. It was an article about him, and the guy got really mad and called me a fool. And I'm getting used to the name calling now, though, from people. I mean, it's election season.
Did they call you a morally bankrupt, heretic, reptilian cuck?
He called me an idiotic fool. I don't know how you made your way on my friends list, you idiotic fool.
Yeah. How dare you post true articles about Trump?
Right, and I know. And there actually was a study that was done in 2006 that was about that very thing, about political beliefs and cognitive dissonance, and the findings were pretty not shocking to me, but you know, I kind of validating. Did you?
Well, I like to test out people's cognitive dissonance, and I get a real kick out of how the people react to it, particularly the Republicans. I think that Republicans are probably more afflicted with cognitive dissonance than the Democrats are. Democrats are pretty ideologically consistent in that they want the state to control everything, and their rhetoric is they want the state to control everything, whereas the Republicans want the state to control anything, but their rhetoric is small government and leave people alone.
Yeah, so, I agree with you. But, at least Democrats admit it, you know? Yeah, yes, I want bigger government. I want them to take care of everybody.
Yeah, Democrats no longer deny being socialists. Republicans, they're just not very forthcoming yet. But I was talking to somebody not too long ago. I'm going to give a couple of examples. And this guy's talking about how Obama's just going on a rampage and stealing freedom and just absolutely destroying freedom and turning the USA into Venezuela and East Germany and every socialist country that's ever existed. Obama single-handedly doing this and completely ignoring that the Congress has to do most of the stuff on its own, or has to start the ball rolling on most of the stuff. But anyway, so he's just going off on a nut about how Obama is destroying America. And particularly, he's talking about how Obama is stealing our freedoms. And that's the key thing. Obama is stealing our freedoms. He's not even being the cat burglar about it. He's just going in there and snatching them out of your hand as you're, like, standing around. So my response to him is, well, I guess the idea that the troops defend freedom is all BS. Oh, my God.
Ooh, that's a really good point.
If Obama is stealing freedoms and the troops defend freedoms, what's going on? You know, please explain that. And, oh, my God, he's like, you dirty commie, you must hate America. You need to move to Somalia. And I just every single, it was like status bingo. And I had like I had like the coverall in 30 seconds. I didn't even need the free space.
Wow.
He just went on an absolute tirade of you dirty anti-American heretic lizard reptilian morally bankrupt
cop. Morally bankrupt.
I just everything under the sun. He just tore me to shreds over it.
So did he have anything rational to say? Did he at least even try, or did he just totally resort to name calling?
He was done. I mean, quite frankly, he probably could have been involuntarily committed the way he was going off.
Oh my goodness! People just lose it when you shake up their thought process.
Oh yeah, yeah. He seriously lost it. I would imagine that he was feeling physical pain inside of his head from hearing those words.
Blood vessel.
He was like so triggered.
Oh no! And with those people, I always wonder. You know, especially if I don't ever hear from them again, and they're not somebody that I interact with on a regular basis. I wonder what happens. Like, do they go and think about it, or do they just go and, you know, they're angry at you. They're angry at the messenger, you know, the person who's laying the truth on them. I wonder if any of these people ever go and actually like calm down and think about it later, and if any shred of reality hits them at all. Right.
Rarely.
That's the thing.
Rarely, if ever.
Yeah.
And I have a couple more really good stories that I'll share when we come back from this trip to the market. Mind blown.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
The Freedom Fiends now have a free app for your Android phone, tablet, phablet, or other chromed robot turd available now from the Google Play Store, Amazon, and FreedomFiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the artisanal Freedom Fiends radio app allows you to listen live, keep up with the podcast, chat directly with other fiends, get discounts on bigger buttons, brainwash yourself with a 24/7 random episode, and so much more. You know the Freedom Fiends is the best libertarian radio show in the world, but when the fiends aren't live, you can use the app to listen to LRN.FM from anywhere. The Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Tell two friends, review it on Google Play and Amazon, prepare for the inevitable death of terrestrial radio, and get ready for LibPair with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android. Worms.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolfe. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Freedom Fiends. Hey, this is Lou, and I'm joined by Lisa, and we're talking about cognitive dissonance, and I was talking about how I like to make people go crazy with the cognitive dissonance.
Like to make just their heads explode.
I just talked about the guy who was complaining about Obama stealing all the freedoms, and I said, well, it sounds like the troops aren't defending freedoms if he's stealing them, and he lost his marbles. Literally lost his marbles. But one of my other favorites, and I'll do this like all the time, quite frequently, people complain about the government and they're just like, oh my God, it's horrible. It's corrupt. It's incompetent. You know, just really, really, really going crazy. And I'll say, you know what? That sounds like a good argument for abolishing it completely. And they're like, yeah, let's make another, let's get rid of it and make another one. I said, why would you expect the next one to be different?
Right.
At which point they're going to say, well, we're going to get back to the original Constitution. Okay, you mean the one that doesn't have the Bill of Rights but does have the Fugitive Slave Laws? And they just start losing their marbles because they've never read the Constitution, and they've been indoctrinated to believe that it's good. But ultimately, these people that say government is stupid, it's incompetent, it's nothing but thieves and murderers and all this other stuff, and then you say, well, it sounds like there shouldn't be any government. And they're like, but we need government to do all those things that I just said that they can't do worth a hoot. It's literally comical to watch these people. One guy was talking, and his big complaint about government is how brutally inefficient and wasteful it is. And mm-hmm. I said, well, maybe there shouldn't be any government. He says, well, we need government to make efficiency. To make things efficient. Because roads and airlines and stuff like that. You know, without government, who's gonna make the air for the planes to fly through?
Right. Yeah, that kind of reminds me of the other thing you see people say is, well, we need government because we have to have someone control, you know, the bad people. And then I say, well, do you really think most people are bad? Yeah, you know, most people are really evil. And I'm like, okay, so, you know, have you noticed that most of the people who are attracted to politics and want to be leaders and be in control are evil? Well, yeah, but, you know, we just need the right people in. Like, do you not see where there's a pattern here? There's
the just the right people fallacy.
Yes, that one. Right. It's people are evil, but we need people in charge.
Yeah. Well, what it comes down to is, I not only say cognitive dissonance, but it's actually anti-thinking, because let's be honest, if the human species was that evil, if they were just a bunch of bloodthirsty savages, as Thomas Hobbes described them, do you think that any government would ever be able to control them, to keep them in line, to make the bloodlust subside? And quite frankly, if it's in our DNA, if it's our nature to be violent, brutal thugs and thieves and murderers, then there's no way the government's going to be able to stop it.
Right. I think things would be a lot worse overall.
Yeah.
Period.
I think the reason that a government is able to take over is because the majority of the population is not violent, bloodthirsty, or looking to start trouble. I think human nature is more cooperative and peaceful, and that's why governments are able to essentially be the enemy occupation force that they are without finding the resistance that they deserve.
Yeah, I agree with you. In fact, I recently have been researching that too, you know, why, what makes people do bad things? What makes them so compliant? You know, why is it so easy to get people to do certain things? And I see that with, you know, people who think that this whole system is working, voting is working. It's okay. We just have to pick the lesser of the two evils. And it's like, why do you need a ruler at all? And why are you okay with having limited choice?
Because the Constitution says so. We'll be back with the second hour. Oh, and I'm going to leave this hour with another example of cognitive dissonance. Jeffrey Tucker, who I usually think is a great writer, talks about how evil the state is, how horrible the state is, how it's an unfixable beast because the nature of the state is evil. Except for when Rand Paul is running for election. Then it could be fixed.
I've seen a lot of that going on.
Yeah. If Rand is the solution, then the state isn't really the problem.
That's right.
And everything that Tucker said about the state was wrong.
Yep.
See you next hour.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Free Education Center's low-orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Lisa, and we're talking about how your brain is your own worst enemy.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It can be.
Yeah. Well, you talked about in the first hour, you're talking about how people will use their thought process to keep from doing things that they should do, like quitting smoking, coming mm-hmm. up with rationalizations of why they can continue smoking and how it's not going to actually bother them, even though it will.
Right.
And then we also spent a lot of time talking about cognitive dissonance, which would probably be an example of the rationalizations with quitting smoking, but we applied it to a lot of different things, such as political candidates and just mm-hmm. basic belief systems.
Right. And there was actually a study that was done about that very thing, about cognitive dissonance and political beliefs, which I found pretty amusing, because I really like the way that the professor who headed the study kind of explained things. It's pretty, he wrote a book about it, but the way that he explained things in the press release was quite witty, I think. The study was done in 2006, and it was published in the Journal of Cognitive Neuroscience. And what they did was they studied the neural correlates of political judgment and decision making. So they used fMRI, to study the brain activity of 30 men. Half of those men were self-described as strong Republicans, and the other half were strong Democrats. The men were tasked with assessing statements by both George W. Bush and John Kerry. And the statements were ones where the candidates clearly contradicted themselves. There was no doubt, you know, it was very clear that they were saying contradictory things. So in the assessments, the Republicans were critical of Kerry, and Democrats were critical of Bush, but neither would let their own, they all let their own candidate off the hook. So Republicans noticed when John Kerry was inconsistent, Democrats noticed what Bush was, but when their own candidates did it, it was fine. They made excuses for them. So the best part of this, though, to me, was the neuroimaging results. They showed that the part of the brain that's most associated with reasoning was inactive. Most active was the part of the brain that processes emotions.
So what you're saying is, when it comes to politics, people's brains turn off.
Right, yeah. And what the study head, Dr. Weston, said was, the results suggest that the notion of partisan reasoning is an oxymoron, and most of the time partisans feel their way to their beliefs rather than use their thinking caps.
Ooh, my God. That's going to trigger some people.
Yeah.
So in other words, everybody that's all up on Trump or Rand or whichever sock puppet they're excited about, they're just going strictly off of feels, and it has nothing to do with intellect.
Oh yeah, I know you've seen it. I see it all the time, right?
Oh, I would agree. I laugh at it.
Yeah. Weston also said, essentially, it appears as if partisans twirl the cognitive kaleidoscope until they get the conclusions they want, and then they get massively reinforced for it with the elimination of negative emotional states and the activation of positive ones.
Oh, man.
Ouch, right?
And that's just a simple way of saying, or that's a more complicated way of saying, people will ignore the facts until they hear what they like.
That's right. And if you try to tell people this, you know it's going to happen. No, I don't. I don't do that. I'm rational and I'm objective and I'm unbiased.
I can brain properly and I'm not biased and you're just a dirty cuck that doesn't want to make America great again.
You're a morally bankrupt reptilian heathen.
You want Hillary to be president, don't you?
Yeah, it's funny how they jump to that too.
Oh yeah, it's really ridiculous because it's funny when you criticize a Republican, like you say Donald Trump is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink because he uses the government to steal property away from private owners so that he can have it for himself. And some Republican Trump licker will be like, what, you want Hillary or Bernie to win? You don't want America to be great again? You want America to be subpar? You want it to be below average like it is now?
It's the black and white thinking.
Yeah.
It's this or it's that. There's no in between. There's no other alternatives. It's gotten so bad that I've had to kind of post a disclaimer with things now or present one when I'm talking to somebody who isn't familiar with how I think about these things. And I have to say, if I'm criticizing Trump, I have to say up front, I don't like Hillary or Bernie. I don't like any of them. So I'm equally equal opportunity criticizer.
Good for you. And that's something I like about you. But anyway, now, what are some treatments? What are some CBTs, cognitive behavioral therapies, that people can do to unscrew their mind and get back to being a rational human being?
The thing is, you have to kind of be aware of it. You have to be able to, first of all, sometimes it's hard for people to even notice that they're doing this because apparently it kind of happens below, you know, the conscious level. The best thing, though, to do is to be willing to face the uncomfortable truths about yourself and your behavior. And, you know, people strive to be consistent. And when we're not, we get uncomfortable. So when you start feeling that discomfort, maybe take a look and, you know, step back and be objective and examine, you know, why that is.
Yeah. And as far as the discomfort goes, I have literally felt major discomfort, major physical discomfort, and even emotional discomfort when confronted back when I was a statist. And as I mentioned before on the show, I used to be a neocon statist, and I wasn't like a rigid conservative type. I was more the lazy statist, as in, well, you know, the Constitution's a nice guideline. Not that I've read it, but it's a nice guideline. But you know, sometimes the government just needs to do what the government needs to do, and if that involves genocide on the other side of the world, then you know, hey, it's the government. We voted, right? Yeah. And I was very pro-war, and unlike a lot of veterans, I was extremely pro-war, and it's because I hadn't really seen the effects of it really to a great extent. Reason being is the time that I was in was the end of the Cold War and then Desert Storm. And Desert Storm, you know, everybody thought that that went really nice and smooth. You know, nobody really thought that there was a whole lot of PTSD or anything like that out of it. Well, it turns out that there was an awful lot of PTSD. And it turns out the Gulf War syndrome, which was treated like the Agent Orange was during Vietnam. There's really no admission that there was a Gulf War syndrome. I'm still not sure if they've fully admitted to it. But anyway, you know, I didn't really see the destructive effects of war until years later. And that involved some of my friends that I was in the military with. But I was just very lazy and thought, well, you know, they need to do what they need to do. And my liberal friends, who would later become Obama supporters, were questioning me on my beliefs of George Bush being, you know, a good person for the job and doing the right thing. And I said, okay, so people in Afghanistan attacked the United States, but nobody in Iraq attacked the United States. So therefore, invading Iraq is, and rather than saying wrong or right, I would say necessary.
I see.
And there were multiple reasons. Say, well, you know what? You can never be too sure. What else was it? I don't know if I coined the phrase, the proof could be, or the, was it the smoking gun may be a mushroom cloud? But I was saying that very early on. I may have actually coined it, and the NSA snagged it on my computer and gave it to the president. But anyway, maybe. What else was there? Necessary. Oh, you know, we're going to have a lot of house cleaning to do in the Middle East, so it's a nice centralized location to set up all our bases to go out and kick other countries' butts.
Oh, goodness.
And, oh, God, I was just a horrible demon, you know.
It's hard to imagine.
But fortunately, I found liberty as my Lord and Savior and
yeah.
quit being such a Austin Peterson, fueled by vinegar and water.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, I did.
The new anyway, nemesis.
so, in an attempt, because I wanted to be consistent, and I could not be consistent and be a good neoconservative. Mm-hmm. And it was more important to me to be consistent in my beliefs, in my actions, in what I said, than it was to be a good neocon. So eventually I had to accept that all these things that I thought that I believed, I did not actually believe. They were just rhetoric. They were just slogans, mantras, talking points. And I wasn't a believer. I was a repeater.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people do. And I wonder how to break them out of that. You can ask them questions. And every once in a while, I don't know if you've experienced this, but every once in a while when I'm really patient with someone and I just ask them a series of questions, sort of like the Socratic method, you know, yes. you gradually go through and ask them questions and get them to say, well, wait a minute, maybe I am kind of off here. I've had a couple of friends who've kind of come around and now they're like, oh my gosh, you're right. The system is completely just, it's wrong. It's evil. It's corrupt. It's, well, I would say broken, but I think we know it's working how they want it to. But sometimes people do. Yeah. So I don't know what it is that makes some people more open-minded to it and more willing to say, you know what, I was wrong about this before. You know, I've taken in this new information, and now I see. And they change their ways, so.
Yeah, in many cases, it's very much an inability to admit to being wrong. Mm-hmm. You see this out of politicians, whereas they don't want to come out and admit that they were wrong, that they were dead wrong on something. They might say something like, mistakes were made. But it's not very often that they will actually have a moment of honesty and say, you know what, I really screwed that up.
Right.
They'll say, mistakes were made. Mm-hmm. It could have been done better. So, we'll be back with more Freedom Fiends and hopefully a few more answers on how to get away from cognitive dissonance.
The Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
Freedom Fiends. Hey, this is Lou and Lisa, and we are talking about cognitive dissonance and how to overcome it. And Lisa, before we went to break, you were talking about having short little conversations with people. Go back into that, retrace your steps, and let's take it a little bit further.
Right. I think that if you're really patient with people and you don't bombard them with too much information, and you kind of get them to think about the way they think, sometimes you can make breakthroughs with people. So yeah. Socratic questioning is one way to do that, where you just ask a series of questions, you know, why are you saying that? What exactly do you mean by that? How does that relate to what we've been talking about? You know, and then you can ask people, you know, are you assuming that? Where did you get that information? You know, can you verify or approve that assumption? You know, getting people to examine the way they think is one way to overcome it.
Yeah, one of the things that I had to overcome, like I said, I wasn't a believer. I was a repeater because mm-hmm. Most of rhetoric is not based upon any type of knowledge or real specific, you know, it's just ideology. It's not factual or anything like that. It's just a belief system. It's a faith. So what I really had to do was I had to examine a lot of different things, such as can, you know, using a bunch of violence all around the world convince people to love Americans rather than get angry at being bombed and having sanctions and all that other stuff imposed upon their countries. And quite frankly, if I look at it, how would I respond to being treated that way? Mm-hmm. Chances are, I would probably be rather negative myself.
Yeah, a lot of that kind of discussion came up, you know, a couple of months ago when everybody was worried about refugees coming here from other countries, from Syria. And I said, well, where do you think they should go? Well, they should stay there and fight. Well, what about the people with children? What about the elderly people and the people who can't fight? I mean, you think they should just stay there? They don't, you know, what would you do if it was you? Would you try to leave? And when you ask people that, you know, they either do one of two things. They get really mad at you and stomp off and, you know, blow a blood vessel. Or they say, well, okay, well, I see your point, but I don't really know the answer to that. Well, no, come on, you know what you would do. You know that you would take your kids and you would leave. Admit it. But people, like you were saying earlier, don't like to admit when they're wrong or when an idea that they have might be flawed.
Yeah, I quite frankly, if these were the types that were going to fight for freedom, chances are they would have taken up arms and done it already. But no, they don't.
Right.
So yeah. It's all big talk and rhetoric. Matter of fact, the people that talk the most about the Second Amendment are the ones that are least likely to use it.
Right.
Because they're concerned about the amendment and not the guns.
Yeah. That's true. They do get kind of obsessed with that, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. While they're talking about their stupid freaking amendments, their rights are being taken away from them, and they're not doing anything except for maybe just marching around a government office and waving the government's flag. Oh, but it's not the government's flag. It's our flag. We're just letting them use it. That's their response.
Yeah, those are some mental gymnastics right there.
Yeah.
That's a very good example.
If the flag represents freedom, then how about they go defend that freedom that the flag represents, but instead they're worried that somebody might tread on or burn the stupid flag. Well, they don't care about the freedoms being tread upon or being burned that flag represents. So make up your mind, folks.
I think it's just easier for people to worry about those symbols. It's a lot easier for people to rant about those things. And there's also that herd mentality, too. You know, not my flag, not this. And it's like, well, are you really explored what's actually going on? Do you really understand how your rights are being trampled more and more by the government? Do you even care about that? Or are you just worried about a piece of fabric that was probably made in China?
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, if it's the people's flag, not the government's flag, then I'm surprised that the government is not burning it themselves.
Right.
No, it's because it's their flag. I mean, if it was a people's flag and it represented the people's rights, then there's absolutely no reason why the government would be burning that flag.
That's
because
right.
They burn the rights.
Yep.
So, I just can't stand flagotry. But anyway,
no, it makes me crazy too.
so let's get back to reaching out to folks. You mentioned that as you're asking questions, they'll either come along or they'll get really angry. And I think sometimes with the getting angry, it's a matter of going too fast. But we'll continue mm-hmm. when we come back from this trip to the market.
Okay.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Fighting the cognitive dissonance because your brain is a bigger enemy than the government.
Oh, truth.
So, yeah, we're talking about how to talk to people to avoid the cognitive dissonance, to keep the vein in the forehead from throbbing and to keep the head from exploding and getting brains all over the place. So, before we went to break, I was saying that if you talk to somebody and you're challenging their belief system and you go at them too hard and too fast, rather than taking the baby steps that may be required if you take giant steps, so to speak, mm-hmm. they'll have a tendency to freak out over it.
Yeah, they do. I used to do that. I used to bombard people with information. You know, I would give them links to articles and I would post these you know, long responses to any questions. And then I realized that wasn't working so well. So now I my approach usually is to ask them questions instead, because if I can understand where they're coming from and how they think, then it's... If I can understand their perspective, it's going to help me have a better, more constructive conversation with them.
Yeah, not to mention you go to all the work of explaining why a 35% or higher tariff is going to be bad for the economy, and how the countries that have walls and border security happen to be, like, you know, communist countries, things like that. And
right.
rather than actually addressing anything that you said, they'll just respond with, you know, make America great again, or feel the burn, or whatever their stupid little phrases that they say that has a pellet come out of the feeder for them.
Right, just the rhetoric that they're repeating. Because yeah. if people hear things over and over and over again, and politicians, of course, know this, it becomes ingrained, and people will just parrot it without even thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what people do, is they parrot phrase everything.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So they have no original thoughts, they just repeat stuff, and they parrot phrase it.
Yeah, and then you hear that, well, that's how it's always been. And it's like, well, is that working? Do you think it's working well? If not, then why not be open to some other ideas?
Well, there once was a time when there had always been slavery. But mm-hmm. you know, how would you justify that now?
Right.
Did slavery all of a sudden become bad at one time? No. It was always bad. It was just recognized as bad at a later time.
Right.
Or accepted as bad. So one of my big things, and particularly with Ron Paul, because I was basically down the anarcho-capitalist road, going down that rabbit hole, back before I even really knew anything about Ron Paul. I didn't know much about Ron Paul in 2008. I didn't really hear anything about him until 2012. And I said, well, okay, well, I'll give it a shot. I'll get on this bandwagon. You know, maybe he can, you know, save everything and right the ship. And it was a podcast by Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker. It was the first Backwaker podcast I'd ever listened to, and Michael had recommended it to me. As a matter of fact, Michael had just heard the Bad Quaker podcast recently, and I think that was the episode that he heard. So we're going we're jumping in the Wayback Machine here, back to when we first, you know, when we first all started to know who each other were. And Ben was talking about how Ron Paul's not going to get the nomination. You know, the whole delegate trick isn't going to work. And I think he was also talking about the myth of the great man, or as I call it, the great man fallacy, that there are no special people out there with these special powers and abilities that escape other humans. There are no superhuman people out there. So right. It doesn't matter if it's Ron Paul, Trump, Bernie, whatever. These are men, not gods.
That's right.
Hillary is not a goddess. She's just a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to escape the whole theory, the whole great man fallacy, the whole myth, was really an eye-opener, and it opened the door to accepting liberty completely. Because if you look at like the work of Mises and Hayek, where they destroy the idea of central planning under a socialist system, when you're expecting a politician to be that leader, the one to figure stuff out, you're putting your faith in central planning. You're putting your faith in state socialism.
Right. That's right.
So, these things are very conflicting ideas. And because I always wanted to remain consistent, mm-hmm. I had to let these foolish notions of socialism, meaning the Constitution and politicians, I had to let these things go.
Yeah, it's hard for me to relate to some of that, and it's hard for me to relate to a lot of people who, you know, are yay Bernie or Hillary or Trump or Cruz or whoever, because I never went through that. I started off kind of indifferent to politics. I would just kind of ask my dad, you know, because that was way, way back in the dinosaur ages before the internet. And I would just ask him, you know, who am I supposed to vote for? Can you kind of like fill me in on what's going on? And he would, and I would listen to him. And then when I got older, I thought, well, you know, I don't know about all this government. And, my dad worked for the government, so he would complain about them a bit. You know, there's too much regulation and they do this and that. So maybe my impression of government was always kind of negative, you know, from a young age. But my thought was, well, why do I need these people? You know, they all seem like liars to me. They say what they think we want to hear. Why do I need any of these people making decisions for me? I'm a good person. I don't hurt other people. I don't really need, like, to me, a lot of laws are just, it's common sense. And I'm not going to kill people because it's wrong, you know, whether it's legal or not. And so I never got stuck in any of the left-right paradigm or anything.
Yeah, the reason that you need people making decisions for you, and I saw this meme earlier on Anarchy Ball, is you need government to make your decisions for retirement. You need to give your money to them to put in a Social Security, because people are bad at handling money. They're irresponsible at handling money. Therefore, you need to give a portion of your paycheck. You need to give your retirement money to the government that is currently 18, probably pushing $19 trillion in debt, because you make bad financial decisions. Because,
right.
Because you are a commoner. You are just a lowly citizen.
I saw that meme too, and it's great. And it really, and that's another, I love Anarchy Ball for that reason, because they make such good points in a humorous and simple manner. It's right to the point. And I've noticed that when I share those, a lot of people who, you know, are still statists and still kind of vote and aren't really sure what to think about everything, they like those and they understand. They're like, oh, okay, that's a good point. Because it is. I mean, the government of all entities is the worst at handling money. Why on earth would we want to give them a penny of our earnings? I mean, if you want to see it go down in flames, that's who to give it to.
Yeah. Or here's some more... Here's some more cognitive dissonance for you. People believe that government is the only one that can run the police and military, because the police and military are the most complicated and important things out there. Okay. Well, if the government could do the most complicated, important things, then it seems like they should be able to do the less complicated and less important things. So if you think that government is the only entity that is possibly capable of handling national security, then you should probably have no problem with them handling national health care either. Because capability. I mean, if the private sector is not capable of providing security and protection to a neighborhood or an entire nation, then you know how in the happy Halloween is the government going to be able to do it?
Right. And again, it's what is government made up of? It's made up of people. So why can't people do those things outside of government? I mean, it's the roads thing is always really funny to me because I'll say, do you really think that all of us, if government were to disappear tomorrow and the roads disappeared, that none of us would figure out a way, like we wouldn't collaborate and figure out a way to get from A to B? Like we wouldn't build roads and railroads and find a way when everything would just fall apart.
Yeah, you don't think the people at Walmart would say, "Oh my God, we got all these stores over here. We got these, we got these distribution locations over there. You know, how do we get our product from the distribution centers to the stores? And oh my God, how are the customers gonna get to the stores? Are they gonna like go through the woods and crawl under raspberry bushes or something like that?"
And it's, yak back.
Oh, you need trails for the yaks to be able to go through there. It's gonna be forever before the deer can like pound down a trail that's travelable. My God. But it's very clear. Some people will use this actual language. They'll say, "Well, there's no way people can do it. Only government can do that." And when they say that, they're not thinking of government as a collection of people. They're thinking of it as an entity. Dare I even say they're thinking of it as a godlike entity, because it is a religious faith that government is necessary and capable of doing all these things that mortal humans are not capable of.
Right, it is. It's like it's an entity with a magic wand or something that somehow just makes all these things happen, you know.
because the Constitution grants authority and capability. You could just be a window-licking freak show, but as soon as you collect enough votes and the Constitution is like rubbed on you or something like that, and you could do anything.
Yeah, you're legit and magical.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden.
Forget that ring of power that they're chasing around in Lord of the Rings. Yeah, you don't need all that stuff.
No. No, that's the most baffling right there. It's I know we always joke about the roads, but really, I mean, humans are the ones who do this. And people will say, "Well, can you give me an example of a place that has roads without government handling them?" And I'm like, "Are you serious?" And there's that thought, too. Like, nothing can happen without government doing it. We have airplanes. We have ships. We send rockets into space. You know, you're telling me people created all of that.
But, Lisa, if the government didn't pave the air for the planes to fly through, you know, there wouldn't be any space travel without NASA. There wouldn't be any internet without Al Gore.
Oh, dear.
More Freedom Fiends coming up after this trip to the market.
And the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hey, this is Squiskler Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Fiends, and this is Lisa. I'm here with Lou, and we are talking about cognitive dissonance and why people think the things they do.
Why your brain is your worst enemy. It's a worse enemy than the government.
Almost. At least your brain, you can work on that and kind of fix it.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Some people can anyway.
So what is the solution to all this? We've talked a little bit about how to talk to people and also how to deal with it yourself if you recognize that you're doing it.
For yourself, one of the things you can do is kind of write down your beliefs and then write down a list of why you believe that thing. So to go back to cigarettes, because that's a really good example, someone who's a smoker could make a list of all the reasons that they like cigarettes and that they enjoy smoking. And that will help them examine what they think cigarettes have to offer them, you know, what they're getting from it. Because if you weren't getting something from it, then you wouldn't do it. Then make another list of things that are stopping you from quitting smoking or changing your belief system or whatever it may be. You know, what are the things that maybe scare a person, you know, into not giving up that belief system? And then make another list of the benefits that stopping that habit would provide. So you've got those lists, and then you go, and for the fourth part of this exercise, you kind of play the role of a lawyer. You step back, and you're an objective observer to the best of your ability. It's hard for people to do that, admittedly. And you examine all the pros and cons that you've written down, and you assess them. And, you know, for sometimes that can help a person realize that their beliefs are kind of ridiculous or illogical or whatever it may be. And it forces you to face that, you know, and facing it is the first step in overcoming it.
Yeah, I think the recognition that your beliefs or your ideology, I should say, is illogical is probably the toughest part. I mean, it really took a lot for me to admit to my liberal friends that George Bush was not a good guy and going into Iraq was a horrible thing. And ultimately learning that war just creates more war and is destructive at home, abroad. You think of the veterans with the PTSD. They're not getting PTSD because they're going out and playing basketball with kids, you know, with underprivileged kids and teaching them skills or anything like that. They're getting PTSD because they're seeing and participating in really, really horrible stuff that the average person can't even imagine. When you see like the goriest of war movies, you know, that maybe can come close to it, but it's still not the same thing. Because and you're just seeing it in a movie. You're not actually experiencing it. And I mean, when you just look at how destructive war is all around, and I had to come to accept that where I thought, well, you know, war is something that needs to happen, and darn it, you know, we're going to do it because this is America. We're good at it. And yeah. My liberal friends were finally able to teach me that. And now that Obama's a president, I keep offering to return the favor, but they keep declining because their cognitive dissonance is kicking in.
It really is. I mean, he's what, you know, there have been more drone strikes under Obama than there were under Bush.
And the anti-war left.
Right. They did. That's one of the things that's been really frustrating for me, too. And I wrote an article, I did some research last year on that, you know, on politicians and which ones, you know, are profiting from war. And it was pretty eye-opening. And again, it's one of those things that liberals, you know, they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear that their guy has voted to fund war, Bernie Sanders.
you mean their God?
Yeah. Uh-huh. They can do no wrong. They elevate them to this, you know, deity or celebrity status.
Yeah. Hey, here's another one. People say that they want a small but strong government. The size doesn't really matter. It's the strength. It's the ability to impose tyranny upon a population that really counts.
That's right.
And it could be giant and weak.
Right.
Now, the other thing, and this is for you conservatives out there, who actually implements tyranny? We know that the politicians pass the declarations that most people call laws, but who is it that straps on the body armor and goes out there and makes those policies real? Who's the ones that enforces it?
That's
the
right.
The police and military.
Yep.
Just following the orders. Just doing their jobs.
Just doing their jobs.
Re-examine your thoughts. Find out what's full of Schumer. It was a pleasure doing the show with you, Lisa.
You
More
too.
Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.